This is the Diversified Industrials ThinkTech podcast. It's a series that's going to bring you global perspectives on the legal and commercial implications of some really exciting emerging technologies that are transforming diversified industrial conglomerates and our clients all around the world. Hi, everyone. We have a really fun, interesting session today. It's going to be a two-part series because we had so much to talk about in respect of drones and the legal regulatory environment in which these new products are being developed. The main focus is going to be on China and the US. From the warehouse to your doorstep in under 30 minutes. Is this really possible? From a technological standpoint, it absolutely is, but laws around drones, particularly for commercial use, and especially in densely populated areas, are really quite strict, and for good reason. But there are opportunities, and diversified industrials seeking to keep ahead of the technological curve would do well to understand the laws that have developed around this emerging technology. Hello from Tokyo, Japan. Yes, we're back in Japan this time, and welcome to our next edition of DI Think Tech, where we will be discussing the legal and commercial implications of the emerging technologies that are transforming our clients, diversified industrial conglomerates around the world. I'm Jackie Scanlon-Dias. I'm the regional lead for the corporate practice in Hogan Lovells Tokyo office, and I'm joined by my very hardworking co-host and my associate, Ray Dunn.
Hi, Jackie.
So, Ray, tell me, what was the last thing that you ordered online to be delivered to your house?
I ordered a basketball for my son about a week ago.
Oh, I bet he liked that.
Yeah, he's loving basketball recently.
Tell me, how long did it take to be delivered?
It came the next day, and I was really surprised. I mean, I thought that's pretty quick in general to get something delivered right straight to your door.
Yeah.
How about you? What was the last thing you ordered?
Actually, if I'm honest, if it was a pizza, it was a pizza. But delivery of a basketball, or, you know, they'll be doing pizzas soon too, is really just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to drones. This technology has enormous potential for industrial organizations. But as we know from speaking to our colleagues around the world, the legal landscape is quite complicated and varied. So today I'm absolutely delighted to have two special guests from opposite sides of the world. Lisa Elman is joining us from Washington, where she is a partner in our global regulatory group and chair of the Hogan Lovells Unmanned Aircraft Systems Practice. Ray, we really need to get a better name for our group. That's a really cool name. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
And from the other side of the world in Beijing is my good friend Lu Zhao. Lu is a partner in the corporate practice group. Like me, Lu, we totally need a better name for ourselves. With a particular focus on the TMT area.
Thank you, Jackie. It's my pleasure to be here.
So why don't you both tell us a little bit more about yourself and your roles in Hogan Lovells? Lisa, why don't you start tonight?
Sure, Jackie. Thank you so much. And it's great to be with you today. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for the introduction. I lead our global unmanned aircraft systems, or UAS, practice at Hogan Lovells. And yes, we do have such a practice, and it's very active and a lot of fun. We're basically a one-stop shop for everything that any, you know, drone-related company or commercial entity seeking to use drones or worried about others' use of drones or drone security organizations, or any related organizations could need. So we do everything from legislative and policy assistance to regulatory and export and corporate and product liability support and more. And we work with clients really across the industry and across vertical market sectors as well. I also founded and now serve as the executive director of the Commercial Drone Alliance, which is an independent nonprofit organization dedicated to the growth of the commercial drone marketplace and to moving the commercial drone marketplace forward and to moving the policy boundaries forward for reasons that we'll talk about today. So Hogan Lovells is hired now by CDA, Commercial Drone Alliance, to run it. So that's a really great organization where we get to work with a lot of clients in that capacity as well as members of that organization. Now, I came to the drone industry and to Hogan Lovells from the private sector about 4 or 5 years ago now. And my background is from the U.S. federal government. I worked for several years in various roles across the government in roles that where I was promoting emerging technologies, including at the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and elsewhere. And my last appointment, this was during the Obama administration, my last appointment was to run drone policy efforts at the United States Department of Justice and to help lead the White House interagency group that was tasked with integrating drones into our national airspace.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. So Lou, tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at Hogan Lovells.
Okay, sure. Thanks. So I'm a corporate partner in Hogan Lovells Beijing office. I started with my career as a corporate transactional lawyer, focusing specifically on the cross-border M&A, private equity, venture capital transactions. TMT is one of my specialized industries in my practice. I have advised our international tech clients when they make investments in drone companies with the follow-on strategic collaborations to enhance the accuracy and efficiency of the drone products. We also provide advices to the drone companies or tech companies with their technology being applied to drone products regarding various PRC regulatory issues. For example, what kind of license permits approvals they may need in China and how to get those licenses. And also we help with the client in terms of all those compliance issues like the privacy, cybersecurity issues we may discuss later in connection with the drone business.
Thanks, Lou. Actually, that introduction is fantastic. It segues beautifully into my ulterior motive for inviting you both on this talk tonight. I think it's going to be really interesting to talk about technology such as drones with a China lawyer and a US lawyer. And your comment about talking about advice on the sorts of technologies that can be put in these drones, I'd be really interested to see what happens with Chinese technology put into drones that are then sold into the US. Hopefully we can explore that a little bit as we go through. So let's get into our main topic for today, starting with your experience on how diversified industrials, you know, chemicals companies, infrastructure, heavy machinery, engineering and construction, how are they using drone technology? And for those that are not using it, you know, what does the opportunity look like? Lisa, do you want to start through some of the best cases?
Sure, Jackie, happy to. So, you know, as the technology, both the hardware and the software and the information technology on these drones has really improved, so has this marketplace has really taken off. There was one study recently that showed a PricewaterhouseCoopers study that showed that drone powered solutions would be worth approximately $127 billion. So this is something that across vertical market sectors, there's a ton of interest in figuring out how to use drones to advance your business, and particularly in the diversified industrial space, as well as other sectors. But in this space, in various use cases that would support the industrial infrastructure community, there's a bunch of them. Drones are used for routine aerial monitoring and inspections, for example. They're used for emergency and disaster response-related activities, including damage assessment after an event. It's an efficient and quick way to try to figure out what went wrong and hopefully potentially even save lives in the process. They're being used by many of our clients as well for security monitoring. Obviously, critical infrastructure facilities could be sensitive airspace and as well as physical space, and drones are great for monitoring perimeters and providing security. They perform inspections required for regulatory compliance with various laws that would otherwise, for example, require an employee to climb a structure. They're great for, you know, measuring stockpiles, for aerial mapping to track the progress of construction activities, for, you know, you guys talked in your opening about the delivery of basketballs and pizza, but companies are also looking to deliver their own parts and supplies internally, right? So we have lots of different clients in this sector that are utilizing drones. You know, one I would mention in particular, GE Aviation has a subsidiary called Aeros. That's their drone company, and we help them and their sister company, Avitas, to, you know, obtain approvals, allowing them to conduct oil and gas infrastructure inspections in the Texas Permian Basin on behalf of a major oil company. And, you know, there's an incredible need for drone technology out there. There's, I think, something like a death every 36 hours out there. Oh, I mean, it's goodness. Dangerous territory. So, you know, drones really save lives. They increase efficiencies. They're good for dirty, dangerous, dull, dreary tasks. And the diversified industrial space has really started to seek to adopt them. I would also add, and we talked a little bit about this, you know, you mentioned some of the export issues, and then there's, you know, Lou mentioned in her introduction about cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. In addition to the strong desire by the diversified industrial sector to use drones commercially, there is also a concern about what I would term the careless, the clueless, and the criminal. All technology can be used for good and for bad. And of course, drones are no different. So there's a lot of interest from companies in drone security capabilities like counter drone technology and that market and protocols as well.
That's a terrific overview, actually. That was very helpful. Lou, what's happening in China? What are the best use cases in China? Is it similar to what we're hearing in the US, or is it different?
I would say that actually it's quite similar, you know, as what Lisa described in terms of the usage of drones in China. The drone companies in China are quite well established, and we have some good and famous drone companies, like DJI is a leading drone companies and is a Chinese company. And also Chinese government really put a lot of efforts in terms of promote the developments and the application of advanced technologies these days, and have seen benefits of using those drones for some government functions. Like in terms of those disaster-related activities, China started use drones for disaster relief in the 2008 Sichuan earthquake. At the time, you know, the main road in Sichuan was seriously endangered, and it's really hard to send people on the ground to see the actual damage there and to get all the data. And the government has tried to use satellites and aero survey aircrafts to get those data, but failed. So at the end of the day, they started to use the drones for the air photo imagery and remotely sense data.
Right.
And that was found to be very effective in terms of determining the issues and find out where the damages are and even where the people may still survive at that time. So since that year, that's 2008, about like 11 years ago, and we have a couple other earthquakes in China, and we use the drone technology all the times, and it's quite helpful for those disaster relief activities.
Similar, when we had a big hurricane came mm-hmm. through my hometown in North Carolina last year, they had tons of aerial photos from drones. And this was, you know, it was unbelievable to see the amount of flooding that had occurred. And they were able to actually identify people that were like stranded in their houses, on the roofs, things like that, from the drone technology. So I think that's a really nice, important application both of you have kind of mentioned so far. Sorry to interrupt you, Lou. What else did you see?
No problem. Yeah, there are also one important major development and usage of drones in China is in the agriculture sector. Hmm. Drones can not only spray water, fertilizer, but also can sow seeds and feed farm animals. This kind of usage can help with promoting the efficiency, lowering the cost, and also maximizing the environmental protections.
Wow.
So, you know, like DJI, I mentioned that the company, they start with those consumer drones, but now they try to turn to this kind of professional usage and they try to develop the agriculture drones as well. And also in China, actually, because of agriculture is one of the major industries in China now, and the government wants to put more efforts to develop the usage of technology for the agriculture business. So some provincial level governments nowadays are willing to provide some subsidies for the purchase or operation of drones by the enterprises to promote this kind of, we call it a green agriculture concept in China.
That's incredibly interesting, isn't it? I mean, do they chase sheep yet? Do they chase cows? Are they as good as sheep, dogs, and cows? This is maybe another new use for them.
Probably yes, but I haven't heard that kind of usage yet.
One of our clients actually, Jack, well, one of our, you asked about that, but one of our clients, the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, actually has used drones in the context of a pilot program for feral hog baiting.
Oh, interesting.
I'm sorry. My American colleague is like, what is feral hog baiting?
It's essentially they have issues with feral hogs and other wildlife. And so drones kind of help bait them and I guess kind of try to control them. That's my understanding, my limited understanding of that industry. But
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I need some drones for my children then. Please them around. Sorry, Lou, you were saying.
No, I think, I would just want to mention that agriculture usage probably can get faster because, usually those agriculture, the farms located at a comparatively remote area where you have less populations. So you can use the drone to fly more freely than use the drone to fly over in the cities. Mm-hmm. But we also see in China, there are some companies, they're trying to do the, try to use drones for the last mile delivery. Mm-hmm. And like in China, those delivery companies is using that, like the giant, we call it, it's very giant companies, SF Express, trying to use the technology. They try to develop the technology since 2013. And also those e-commerce clients like JD.com, they are using the drone. And actually this year, they got even a permit for flying the drone for the cross-provincial delivery of packages. So those drones are going to be very, very focused for those kind of companies going forward.
So the goods come into a centralized warehouse, and then that last mile, i.e. to people's doorsteps or to the company's warehouse where they've ordered the products, is done via drone.
Yes, but probably at this stage, this last mile delivery is still being the places where don't have a lot of populations.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because there are still, we can talk about, those restrictions, how you drones can be flying in a condensed population area. But I think probably similar thing in U.S., like in China, in Beijing, we have circles in Beijing's municipal area, like within the 6 circles, you cannot fly drones in Beijing. So basically, you cannot do this last mile delivery in the city in Beijing.
Right, yeah. And I've heard similar things about here in Tokyo, like the whole, all 23 wards, you're not allowed to fly any drones anywhere to do this kind of last minute delivery. But they're looking at, possibly doing this for the more rural areas, particularly for like elderly people that have a hard time going to the store to get something. It's really interesting. A lot of the rules that, are developed around this technology. For both of you, how do you see the rules kind of accommodating this technology? I know we've got some strict rules about densely populated areas, but what else have you seen? What else have you noticed? Lisa, what about you?
Yeah, sure. So, while these technologies have moved really quickly forward, as we've talked about, the policymaking has somewhat lagged behind. It is slowly catching up, as, Lou talked about what's going on in China. In the U.S., under U.S. law, so unmanned aircraft or drones are considered aircraft, which means that they're regulated by the Federal Aviation Administration and are subject to the Federal Aviation Regulations. And, there are certain aspects of operating a drone that the FAA does not regulate, such as privacy and property rights issues, but the FAA will focus on safety issues. And these other issues are typically addressed through state and local laws. But at the national level, what's interesting is the Federal Aviation Regulations, of course, were initially drafted with manned aircraft in mind. They didn't contemplate the operation of drones, right? So there are rules that say, for example, if you're flying an aircraft, you have to have a manual in the cockpit on board an aircraft, right? So you can imagine.
May not be a cockpit anymore.
Right. Yeah. Like, how does that work as applied to drones? That doesn't really make any sense. And it leads to absurd results. And as of just a few years ago, commercial drones were not yet broadly authorized under the Federal Aviation Regulations. And you had to actually go through and get exemptions to all of the manned aviation regulations in order to fly a drone. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the regulatory framework has somewhat moved forward. And in August of 2017, here in the U.S., the FAA small UAS rule, which is known as Part 107 of the FARs, went into effect, and it broadly authorized low-risk commercial drone operations. So drone operations that are within visual line of sight, not over people, not in urban areas, during daylight hours, generally below 400 feet above ground level. And this was a really big deal for the commercial drone industry here, because this was for the first time ever there was broad authority to operate commercial drones, even if in a very low risk way. But it was definitely a huge step forward. And then what companies really want to be able to do, though, is fly beyond visual line of sight, you know, fly at night, fly over people in urban or suburban areas, or over moving vehicles, which would count as well. So fly over roads, right? You need to be able to fly over roads in order to traverse a city. So Part 107 includes a waiver process that's been pretty limited so far. It allows companies to conduct more advanced drone operations. There have been some meaningful approvals, but they have generally focused, like Lou said, in you know, more rural areas, for example, for beyond visual line of sight authority, and some limited approvals. We helped CNN, for example, get the first ever operations over people waiver in order to fly drones for news gathering over people. But Part 107 really only applies to small UAS that are under 55 pounds. And those existing manned aviation regulations, which I mentioned, still apply to drones that would be over 55 pounds, and you would have to go through and get exemptions from all the various provisions in those rules in order to get approval on a case-by-case basis in order to get approval to fly. There are different, you know, Part 135 is involved with package delivery. There are different rules for agricultural spraying operations, but you still have to go through and get various approvals. And then you also need airspace authorizations in addition to the operational approvals. And so that's something where there has been some, you know, they have innovated in that space. There's this new program called the Low Altitude Authorization and Notification Capability System, known as LANCE, where FAA has essentially partnered with private industry who have automated airspace authorizations from the FAA. So that's been a very positive development as well. But, you know, like I said, in order to get to expanded operations, which is what companies are really looking to do in order to take advantage of the amazing safety and efficiency benefits of commercial drones, you know, flying over people in urban areas, beyond visual line of sight for pipeline inspection, power line inspection, other types of inspections, it doesn't really, the efficiencies aren't there if you have to get up and follow a drone every mile or so, right? So where this industry will truly take off is once we have expanded operations. But here in the U.S., the federal government has made very clear that a drone security legal and policy framework must be implemented first. And so, you know, we talked about how all technology can be used for good and for bad. And this is something that the federal government is taking really seriously. And so from their perspective, this has two parts: remote identification. How do you know whose drone it is that's flying out there, right? Like, is there a virtual drone license plate requirement so that I know whose drone that is that's flying in the airspace above my house, for example? And then if there is a threat, let's say, you know, to in some sensitive airspace, has counter drone technology been enabled in order to mitigate potential threats? And last year, there was an important step forward with the Preventing Emerging Threats Act to enable certain federal agencies to lawfully use counter drone technology. And that was an important step forward. And then on remote identification, it's been in the works for a while now, but a draft rulemaking is expected from the FAA imminently that will provide a remote ID framework. So that's something that the whole commercial drone industry is watching very carefully.
Right. Okay. So, you know, clearly it's one of these areas where the legislation is, you know, struggling to keep up with the developments of the technology. I mean, Are you expecting this to change a lot? I mean, the technology is changing so quickly, and as we heard earlier, the uses are expanding. Are you expecting to change a lot in the near future, or still stay relatively limited, i.e. with these line of sight restrictions, et cetera?
Well, there's just a key gating item. I mean, it's a great question, Jackie. The key gating item here is having a remote identification framework in place here in the United States.
Okay.
And once we have that, we will be able to have expanded operations. There's already been a proposed rulemaking on operations over people, which would broadly enable, in a very limited way, at least as of the proposed rule, drone operations over people. But they made clear that that rule would not be implemented until remote ID is implemented. And so again, there's this, you know, huge gating item out there that just needs to be done. But I absolutely believe that in the somewhat near future, I mean, there's been a lot of progress made around the technical standards that are needed in order to fly over people, over, you know, beyond visual line of sight. There's a lot of progress that continues to be made. One of the big things that we're focusing on here in the United States is developing an unmanned traffic management system, what's known as UTM, or like highways in the sky for drones, and developing the rules of the road for those highways in the sky. And UTM has been developed between the private sector and NASA, our space agency here, and it's now with the FAA for implementation. So that's something else, like another critical piece that, you know, when we have UTM, you have, you know, lots of capabilities will merge, and I think we'll get a lot more permissions broadly. And so, you know, that's something else. There's just certain things that need to get in place before we're going to see true progress. But yes, absolutely, we're seeing progress here incrementally.
That is incredibly interesting. I wonder if the robo-taxis that we're going to be talking about in a couple of weeks will be sharing the same highway in the sky as my pizza as it comes on drone.
Well, it's interesting to see that there's a way forward, right?
Yeah,
there is, you know, the groundwork at least for seeing that kind of thing happen, right?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Fantastic.
Thanks, everyone. That's the end of part one of our two-part podcast on drones. Next, we will be starting with a discussion from Lou on the regulatory environment for manufacturing and operating drones in China. So we look forward to seeing you on our next show.